I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Are you ready?
What's going on here?
Earth's resistance is futile.
This,
indeed you are, Paul,
is...
It's in my hand, Paul!
Fan Effect.
There's an old saying about having too much of a good thing. It implies that we as humans are able to enjoy something more fully by limiting our exposure to it. For example, eating one donut can be a delicious experience. Eating a dozen donuts in a single sitting can make you sick and maybe even cause you to not want to eat a donut again for a long time. For a visual example, think of that hilarious kitty eating pancake scene at the end of Wreck-It Ralph 2. But is that saying true for all good things, like, say, for instance, Star Wars? Hi, I'm Andy Farnsworth, and welcome to KSL's A Fan Effect podcast, presented by Larry H. Miller Megaplex Theaters. In this episode, I'm joined again by my friend and colleague Herb Scribner, entertainment editor for DeseretNews.com. Herb, welcome back.
Thank you for having me back. Appreciate it.
There's some. You and I are two of the select few thousands around the United States, maybe even the world, who can say we've watched all 9 Star Wars saga movies in a row. We were part of the Star Wars movie marathon at the Megaplex Theaters, no less.
Shout out.
It was leading up to the official release date of The Rise of Skywalker, 24 straight hours spent in that galaxy far, far away that we love so much. There's some unique things that happen when you see all of the movies together like that, and we want to talk about our experience. Herb, tell me your gut reaction.
Well, the first thing I just want to say is, like, as you were hyping that up and talking about the 24 hours, I'm actually, like, stunned that that happened. Like, I totally forgot that I spent 24 hours sitting next to you. Like, that's totally forgot about that.
I never forgot. In a good way.
Yeah, in a good way. Gut reaction, I mean, it was a great time. It felt very quick, but also very, like, long at the same time.
There were a lot of things like that during the 24 hours.
Yeah, and I think it did help. It did help me, like, enjoy Rise of Skywalker a lot, because you did catch little things that you're like, oh, yeah, that's that movie. Obviously, I'm a big Star Wars fan, so I really enjoyed watching all of them back-to-back like that. And, I mean, the whole experience was fun with, like, the popcorn, the soda, the food, the fan vibes, the experience there. I think it was just, like, a quick, like, hey, this is one day, but it was, like, it wasn't overkill, right? And I think that was fun. And I had you next to me.
It bears pointing out. Oh, no, go ahead and finish that thought.
Oh, yeah. I had you next to me giving me trivia along the way, so I can't hate on that, you know?
Well, I appreciate that. I'm glad that that wasn't an annoyance. It was, for me, that's the first time I've ever powered through a series of movies like that. I mean, I could honestly say the most movies that I probably have ever watched in a row was 3, and it was probably when, you know, 20 years ago when I was still single and we had a bunch of friends come over, a bunch of single friends, and we all spent a whole Saturday watching the original Star Wars trilogy on VHS.
Wow.
At one point, we watched the trailer for Episode 1, The Phantom Menace, that we had recorded on VHS off of television.
Wow. Wow.
Before you could even really... it would have taken like 6 hours to download the trailer back in 1999.
Oh, yeah.
But... that was the last time I think I sat and watched that many movies in a row. Now, hour-wise, I think I came close when I think I watched 2 Lord of the Rings extended versions on the same day. That was a lot of hours of watching something, but nothing that approached 24 hours. But you have actually done far more than this. Earlier this year, you did the... this is twice in a year. I just realized that earlier in 2019, I should say, since now we're in 2020. But you saw the Avengers movie marathon, all 20, what, one?
22 movies,
22,
61 hours, including Endgame, 61.5 hours.
That's just...
woof.
That's...
yeah. It was a lot.
So this was just like an easy breeze in the park. Nine movies.
Yeah, it was in terms of length, it was easier. But like for some reason, I think it was harder on me because I wanted to stay awake more for these. Because the Avengers movies and the Marvel movies, I don't mind. They're very formulaic.
I don't think you could have stayed awake for 61 straight hours. Or wasn't it about 61?
Yeah, it was about 61. I remember passing out for like, it was funny. I had a routine where I would like be awake for the first 30 minutes and then I'd fall asleep for the next hour and a half and then I'd wake up for like the final five minutes.
Climax.
Yeah. So this was nice because I did get to see majority of the movies, although I think it was Attack of the Clones I fell asleep during. I remember you nudged me awake a couple of times. So.
It was Revenge of the Sith.
Revenge of the Sith. Oh, I love that movie too.
Yeah, and that's why I said, at one point I poked you and I said, hey, is there anything you want me to wake you up for specifically? Because your head was lolling to the side. And the funny thing was, is you'd just gotten a coffee and you were ready to go.
Oh, yeah.
And then you just went out like a light.
Did you fall asleep during any? I forget.
I think I never fell full asleep.
Okay.
But I do recall getting things get a little cloudy during a really short segment of Revenge of the Sith.
Okay.
And a small stretch of Return of the Jedi.
Okay. That makes sense.
But I stayed pretty much awake through all of it. I tried to plan it out fairly well. I took a nap in the afternoon before it started in the evening. I knew that, you know, just the excitement of all of it, there was going to be a little bit of adrenaline going with that. I'd never tried this before.
Right.
I wanted to stay. I'd stayed awake the whole time. With the Marvel movie marathon, there was actually a people put on the internet which movies you should sleep through and which ones you should stay awake for so that you could survive all of that. But I didn't think that was going to be necessary for just nine movies in a row. But again, I'd never sat. I didn't know if I would be tired of Star Wars.
Right.
And we'll have a final verdict on that at the end of the episode. But we got hosted by the Megaplex. It was great. They gave us a commemorative tin. A popcorn tin that we could refill as many times as we wanted. Part of my strategy was to not do that because, well, I'm not going to go into too much detail because nobody cares about that. But bodily function-wise, about 12 hours after you eat a lot of popcorn, you feel the effects.
Things happen.
And since this was going to be 24 hours, I had to say, okay, I want popcorn. I want to eat a lot of it. I also didn't want to have that sugar drop-off where you eat something that has like a lot of carbs and then you have a drop-off.
Ah.
And because I'm really caffeine sensitive, I didn't want to have any caffeine until we hit the middle of the night part.
Oh, smart.
When I thought, this is where I'm going to start losing it.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I tried to space all that out. So I had a strategy going in. I wanted to be awake for all of it. I wanted to take a lot of notes, and I did.
Yeah.
I kind of took the notes on Twitter. It was probably funnier if you were reading them at the time.
Yeah.
I am going to repeat some of them here because these were my thoughts. And, you know, now that it's been a couple of weeks, I went back and I was like, okay, I want to make sure I remembered all the thoughts that I had. And I was really glad that I had tweeted out. Nobody saw the middle of the night tweets during A New Hope and Revenge of the Sith because they were all asleep, as they should be. But let's get into the movie then. So for straight overview, you knew what you were doing. It was my first time. It might be my last time. I can't think of another movie series where I would be willing to, you know, go through that.
Yeah.
You know, I've got kids, you know, I've got a wife and kids and
I don't.
And that helps.
Yeah, that helps.
I'm not gonna lie.
Totally helps.
That probably helps a
totally.
Lot.
Totally. No, so, it totally does.
But let's get into it and let's start with The Phantom Menace and the prequel trilogy. That's what it started with. So went through the order. 7 p.m. starts with The Phantom Menace. About 9:30, we watched Attack of the Clones. Midnight, Revenge of the Sith. 2:30 in the morning, A New Hope. 5:30 in the morning, because they gave us a break for breakfast, about an hour's break for breakfast, Empire Strikes Back. And then about 8:30, or maybe it was a little bit earlier than 8:30, maybe it was closer to 8, Return of the Jedi.
Yep.
Then we got a break.
Yep.
And then it was Phantom Menace around like 10 a.m. or something like now.
Force Awakens.
Closer to 11. Force Awakens, right.
Yeah, yeah.
Force Awakens. And then we had The Last Jedi, which was the longest.
Yep.
And then we had a break for dinner.
Oh.
And then it was the Rise of Skywalker that started at 5 p.m. So the really nice part was we got to start watching it at 5 p.m. when most of the fans and regular people didn't get to start until 6 or 7.
6 or 7,
so
yeah.
So we did have that little bit of a bump that we got out of it earlier than everybody else. So that was it. Over 24 hours, we got a couple of food breaks, And they fed us, which was great. We got a blanket. Oh, such a soft fleece blanket.
It's an amazing blanket.
Love that blanket. I have it on my bed now.
Yeah, same. It's so good.
It has
it's
all
so
the
good.
Names of the movies in the scrolling fashion, like the title crawl for Star Wars. And then at the bottom, it has the full Rise of Skywalker logo where it's written in between the star and the wars.
Yep.
And it says, you know, movie marathon. So that to me, that was the coolest thing that we got out of all of it was the Star Wars blanket.
Yeah.
But I was also determined not to use the Star Wars blanket because then I would go to sleep.
Yep. I didn't use it until I got home because I didn't want to fall asleep right there with you.
All right. So let's start with the prequel trilogy, The Phantom Menace. Full disclosure, I had my child's concert and I missed the first hour of The Phantom Menace. So you could argue I didn't really miss anything. Some might argue that. But let's talk about thoughts. These are going to be our thoughts then as we watched all the movies, different things that came to us. Some will be funny, some may be poignant, some may cause you to think. But I'm curious to know what were some of your thoughts as you watched The Phantom Menace.
Yeah, so I think initially I'll just say that I was a big Phantom Menace hater for a long time. And then watching it again, I realized how much I like it and how good quality it has and how connected to Star Wars it is. Like, it is a very Star Wars movie.
Okay.
So I love that. Some notes. I'm looking through my Twitter feed as well. That was a great idea. Some notes that I wrote. It's so funny how they tried to, like, I don't know if they intentionally wanted you to know that, like, Darth Sidious and Senator Palpatine was the same person, but they didn't really go out of their way to, like, hide that. That was interesting.
The only thing they didn't show was the top of the head of Sidious.
Right, right.
There were a few arguments back in the day. Again, for those of you who may be younger and didn't watch Phantom Menace in theaters, or if you were young when Phantom Menace was in theaters, I can speak from the perspective. I mean, I was 24, 23, almost 24 when it hit theaters. So
in your prime.
We had a lot of anticipation.
Right.
I had a ton of Star Wars knowledge already at the time. And so as I'm watching it, I'm trying to catch little things that might be, ooh, what does this mean? What does this mean? And that was part of the fun.
Yeah.
You know, what is George Lucas showing us that kind of gives us a hint for the future? That might be the first time I looked for Easter eggs.
Oh, interesting.
In a movie. I can't think of a time before that where I would have watched it thinking, oh, I wonder if this ties into that. That might be the first time now that I think about it. I wish I'd have tweeted that.
Yeah.
But
interesting.
But it was a huge thing. So we're watching for all these little things. And of course, I knew that Palpatine was the Emperor.
Right.
Even though they never say Palpatine in Return of the Jedi.
Right. But all the
But I'd
toys
read the books
and
all of these things. So
right.
Senator Palpatine, I knew, was going to become the Emperor. So then really the question among Star Wars fans was Darth Sidious Palpatine? Or was there some kind of cloning going on? Because we knew the Clone Wars were going to come into this at some point.
That's true.
So
that's interesting.
When it first came out, the only question was, is Palpatine both of those people? Or is one different than the other somehow, but, you know, sibling or a clone?
Yeah, that's interesting. That discussion would definitely be going on for older people, whereas kids are like, oh, whatever, you know.
And for one thing, and I'm glad this came up because it's hard to describe, and as I go through and talk about all these different movies, there's no way for me to separate my experiences with them the first time or the other times, you know, from younger. This isn't my first time watching them all in a row. Like, if I'd have brought my 6-year-old son, he would have had a different experience than I would. He may have had a more fun ride, whereas I was trying to. I just can't separate my past experience with Star Wars from this time going through it. So I may jump in with observations and how it relates to how I saw it before. So
that's smart.
Anyway, what else?
Let's see. This is kind of a funny thing. So Qui-Gon Jinn and Obi-Wan Kenobi had a day, that first day. They, like, fly onto that ship. They get attacked by droids. They have to sneak onto, like, a droid army ship.
Transport, right?
Or transport. They go to Naboo. They get, like, they meet Jar Jar Binks. They go to Jar Jar Binks' place. Then they go to the palaces. I mean, they have a long day.
That's true. That the sun never does set on all that, does it?
No, and then, like, the next time, then they go on the ship, and then they just keep going.
They get to Naboo City, or Theed City, and then they break out the princess, get on a ship, and fly off to Tatooine. That is one long day.
Yeah, it's a very long day.
Although I've learned with Star Wars, it's best not to ask questions about how long things take.
That's true.
They kind of play fast and loose with, what is a day exactly anyway?
Yeah, and, like, there's been articles about, like, space travel, like, how long it takes.
Right.
And they're just
that was
go
a big thing
planet.
In the Star Wars role-playing game was, you know, what's the point of Han Solo having like a sleeping compartment if his trips all take like 20 minutes from planet to planet, you know?
Right.
Does it take a few hours? I mean, does it take longer to get out of the atmosphere of the planet than it does to get to the next one?
Oh, that's interesting.
You know, how long was Luke exactly training with Obi-Wan? 25 minutes?
Right.
Was it a day?
Right.
So.
That's interesting.
It's better to just not ask those questions.
Yeah, yeah. Leave those to the. Some other things I thought were interesting is kind of the. When you think of perspective, like. So Obi-Wan suggests they go to Tatooine to hide the queen and all that. And it's just funny to me thinking like, wow.
So they could do repairs.
Right, right. And he ends up obviously spending like a majority of his life there, or at least 20 years, right, after this whole prequel series is done.
So it's kind of this thought. I didn't even think of it.
So that, like thinking like, wow, like you're setting up your own destiny in a way. And then it's interesting too when him and Anakin meet for the first time. It's like, oh, like you, like those two guys are going to battle like crazy and have this crazy relationship and –
Have you seen any of the memes where it's like it's a still shot of Obi-Wan and Anakin shaking hands when they're just getting away from Darth Maul? And it's like, hi, I'm Obi-Wan Kenobi. I'm going to chop your arms and legs off later in life and leave you for dead and burned alive.
I mean, it's not wrong.
It's not, but you don't think of it that way.
No, you definitely don't.
That was a good thought, though. I mean, when Obi-Wan flew away from Tatooine for the first time, was he like, ugh, I hope I never have to go back there again.
Right, right. And then he ends up, that plays a significant point in his life for years to come, really.
That's a great observation. I like it.
Then the other thing that was interesting, Anakin's first words, I was like looking for this. His first words in the entire saga.
Let me see if I know it.
Okay.
Are you an angel?
Close. No. He says something else.
What?
He comes in from like the back room and so Watto says something to him and he says, I was cleaning the fan switches. I was cleaning the fan switches. Those are his first words ever as a young boy in the whole Star Wars saga.
Okay. Not very profound.
No, I find that a missed opportunity. And to be fair, I don't know if I forget.
Really? For some reason, I would have thought the first second you see him, and then the first thing you would have said to Padme is, are you an angel?
Yeah.
She's like, what? Who are you, little kid?
I think, no, I don't remember this. So you might be right in a way, because I think that might also be what he says in that other language. That's translated.
So what he says is, he said I was cleaning the fan switches in Huttese, I believe what they call it.
Yeah. So I thought that was interesting. Because that felt very underwhelming to me, that those are his first words.
Okay.
I got stuff about Jedi arrogance, which we could go into. I thought it was interesting that the crowd cheered for Darth Maul. And
because it's the freaking awesomest lightsaber move. In fact, one of my observations was the best part of the movie, without question, is Duel of the Fates.
Yeah.
And I just love Qui-Gon's reply. We'll handle this. I just love that. I love that.
Yeah.
No. And then they start getting ready to, they all macho pose with their lightsabers, and then it's on.
Yeah, that was a great scene. It was cool to see that again after on the big screen, too. And that was a point that you made to me in person there that I didn't think about until you said it, was that, like, I hadn't seen these movies on the big screen since I was a kid.
Right.
And so it was amazing. And I had never seen A New Hope on the big screen. I don't even think I saw the special edition version of that. I saw The Empire Strikes Back special edition re-release. But I never saw Return of the Jedi.
It?
Yeah, 1997. You remember they did the...
A New Hope was re-released same time.
Yeah. And
so
they released
them all over the course of like a month.
Right. And I don't think I saw A New Hope or Return of the Jedi re-release.
What?
But I only saw Empire Strikes Back re-release.
Why wouldn't
I was
you
seven.
Have gone to all three?
I was like seven.
What's with your parents? They take you to Empire when you're seven, but not like the two most kid-friendly ones, the first and the third one?
As far as I remember. Maybe they did. I don't know.
No, that's funny.
But yeah, Phantom Menace.
I've been out of the country for 2 years, and I came home.
Uh-huh.
And the first thing I did was went to Taco Bell, and the next day I'm going to Star Wars in the theater.
Dude, that's a way to return right there.
It was pretty awesome.
Return of the Andy.
I returned just as the Jedi in the movies did to the Cineplex.
Boom.
Oh, love it.
Yeah. So that was cool.
So my first thought that I wrote while I was watching it was watching Phantom Menace, and I'm thinking it would have been a decent introduction if it were the first two episodes of a TV series. But it just isn't interesting enough or quickly paced enough to be a good movie.
Interesting.
So that was my thought. And especially, again, like I said, it's hard to watch these things without how I am now.
Right.
I can't just
right.
parse it back to a wide-eyed, you know, 7-year-old or something right. like that. But it would have, I mean, I feel like The Phantom Menace would have worked as a TV show. If you think about breaking it up into 2-hour-long TV shows, the first part goes, it starts off with a bang, and it ends with the pod race. Yeah. Episode 2 starts with Anakin leaving and ends with the duel and Qui-Gon's death and something like that. And then it gives you more time to sort of lay the scene of the land. They could have maybe taken a little longer to explain the Senate, to where it doesn't feel like you're wasting my time in a 2-hour movie with stuff that I don't care about. I mean, yes, it adds, you know, it sets the scene, but I don't want a too much of a scene setter. I need you to set the scene like Han Solo, and this is one of the arguments that I've seen online before, is Han Solo sets the scene by just being who he is. He does a couple of things, and immediately you'd make all these assumptions about him.
Right, right.
And why couldn't we have that in The Phantom Menace, where it takes time? I mean, the first words on the crawl is the crisis, the outlying trade routes are in dispute. And you're thinking, how is that like the beginning of a crawl?
Right,
like,
to get you
which
excited.
Where it's going to set you in the story.
Right.
You know, there had to be a more exciting way to maybe drop you in. Like, instead of, you know, who cares about the trade routes? We can explain that in the thing. You could just say, crisis, the Trade Federation has blockaded the planet of Naboo, and the Chancellor has sent 2 Jedi Knights to help resolve the dispute.
Yeah.
You know, something to that effect.
Yeah.
And then you drops right in, and we could find out that it's a trivial trade dispute just from dialogue.
Yeah. Oh, totally.
So that's why I said, I feel like it would have been better as a first episode of a TV series. That's the first time I'd thought about it like that. But it's also the first time I'd watched it in an era where we have 10, 12 hours on streaming services or something like that, where they can lay out a series and they don't have to rush into any particular part. And you as an audience are more forgiving of slower moving parts where you're trying to get to know characters or you're trying to get to know, you know, the setting that everything's in, so you can get more involved. So that was my first thought. Another one of my thoughts was Captain Tarples should get some kind of a double medal for risking his own life for Jar Jar.
True. I mean, that's a sacrifice right there. Wow.
Now, here's a deep thought. How would the galaxy have been different if only Obi-Wan had been a step faster and not got caught in the shields during Duel of the Fates?
Oh, true. Things would be very different.
What if they both were dueling Darth Maul in the reactor core, where there was nowhere else to run?
Yeah.
And they're both there.
Yeah. Interesting.
And also, what if Obi-Wan could heal Qui-Gon the way Baby Yoda and Rey and Kylo Ren can?
Oh, man.
How things would have been different.
So different. Wow.
In fact, it's kind of cheap that Obi-Wan didn't know how to do that.
Yeah.
Because obviously you can heal a lightsaber blade through the midsection.
Clearly, as we've learned.
As Rey proved.
Yeah, as we've learned, you can do that. Wow.
So those were my thoughts on episode 1.
Okay.
The Phantom Menace. I do prefer seeing the CG Yoda versus the puppet Yoda that was in the original release.
Same here.
Yaddle. We need to CG Yaddle too. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
I hope we don't find out that the child as
the child, yeah,
as he's technically known, is Yaddle's kid.
Oh, that'd be so awesome.
All right. So that was Phantom Menace. Now we get to Attack of the Clones. In all honesty, I loved Attack of the Clones when I saw it in theaters back in 2002. It was the first Star Wars movie I got to see before it came out. I was doing traffic for a radio station. The DJs, I guess, got invited through some means or other, and they knew I was a big fan. So my friend, who was a program director, got me on the list.
That's awesome.
And I was so excited that I could not sleep the night before. If I did fall asleep, I had a dream. I went to the wrong theater and I woke up in a panic. It was
nice.
It was like a full week before the release date.
Oh wow!
It was unbelievable. And so that was part of the excitement, is knowing I got to see it early. I immediately got done and called my brother at New York University Law School, which was an expensive call in 2002.
Oh, I'm sure.
And I didn't even wait. I used my cell phone. Wow. I'm like, Dad, guess what I just got out of? But then I also learned that the drawback of that is when none of your friends can see the movie, you got to sit on all the information for a week, and that kind of stinks.
Yeah, that is tough.
So I still don't hate Attack of the Clones. I really enjoyed the chase through Coruscant after the assassin, especially the John Williams score. But even now, it just went too long.
Yeah.
It just was a little too long. I'm not sure where to cut it. Maybe cut a few of the turns or whatever. But for a movie that was already over 2 hours, an extended chase scene that doesn't really do anything.
Yeah, it doesn't really.
I mean, they catch the assassin and then they die. But, I mean, the whole point was to find out that Jango Fett had hired her.
Yeah, right.
And they could have done that faster, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know. That was something that I didn't enjoy as much this time as I did maybe the first time I saw it.
Right.
What about you? First thoughts.
I have
a controversial one that you and I have talked about before, but I'm going to bring it up again.
Okay.
But you go first.
Yeah, I didn't mind Attack of the Clones as much as I thought I would, but it definitely goes to show that first chunk isn't like, it's not horrible, but it's also like pointless, like you just said. Like, it's kind of like, okay, well, we learned Jango Fett, and then we get to Kamino, and then, so like that first chase scene and the whole like, and then like Anakin, sorry, I'm just like transitioning, but Anakin is like super creepy in like that first like 10-20 minutes of the movie where he's just like staring down Padme and he's, you know, saying things like, I've thought about her every day since I left and like all this stuff. And he, Hayden Christensen plays it with creeper mode on. So, you know, that inspired some like nervous chuckles.
I will tell you this, even in 2002, it was a little bit odd.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
it's a little weird.
I kept thinking, man, you're not going to impress the girl by saying some of that.
No, you're definitely. Yeah, exactly.
Stop looking at me like that.
Yeah.
Like what?
Yeah. Like
that.
Like that.
Why? Because it makes me uncomfortable.
Yeah. That was interesting.
I'm sorry, my lady.
Yeah. It's like, okay. The cool thing was, though, when I first saw Jango Fett, I don't know if it got me more interested or I was just like a little bit more attached to it because of The Mandalorian. Where
interesting.
I kind of had a more like, okay, because like, you know, when I first saw that movie, I had no idea about Mandalore and all that stuff. And so after seeing Mandalorian and now having watched a lot of the Mandalore Clone Wars episodes and everything, now it's like, okay, there's actually some interesting like deeper ties here.
Right.
That made me more interested in him.
Well, this is a Star Wars universe. I mean, that's part of the draw for people like us and for all the other fans is it seems like a full place, like a place that could exist somewhere.
Right.
And
right.
It's not just, you know, a one-off story that takes place in Bangor, Maine or something like that. You know what I mean? It's,
yeah.
It's like, oh, that'd be so cool to live there with like laser guns and ships that could fly faster than light.
Yeah.
So the more that it feels like a universe with all these things with a history. That was one of the things that George Lucas did in A New Hope, that for some people, you know, Mark Hamill talks about how the dialogue was practically unsayable, and Harrison Ford had the famous line of, George, you can write this bleep, but you can't say it.
Interesting.
But part of what made it so immersive is that they talk about all these things as if you know what they all are because it's just happening. Everybody
right,
knows.
Right.
And nobody in the real world watching the movie knows what the Kessel Run is.
Right.
It took us 40 years before we even found out what the Kessel Run exactly
True.
Was.
True.
You know, Tashi Station, I didn't know what that meant.
No.
In fact, he's like, I'm going to Tashi Station to pick up power converters. And his uncle says, you can waste time with your friends. I was like, when did he say he was going to hang out with his friends? Like,
right, right.
There was a whole bunch of things. But by doing that, it's saying, you know, hey, this is all going on
right
now. That was the pulp aspect of it. That's why you had to crawl. You're dropping in the middle of a story.
Yeah.
That's one of the things that makes Star Wars so fun and so immersive is that universe that it creates. All right. So now here's where I know I'm going to get some resistance from people. I thought Anakin's terrible dialogue in Attack of the Clones was actually appropriate for a teenager who'd never had any experience with girls, getting assigned to be close to the only girl he's ever had feelings for, and one who's hot like Natalie Portman.
Right, right, right.
And when she's wearing that backless dress.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, come on.
Right.
That might turn suave guys into stammering idiots.
Yeah. Yeah. That I remember you brought that up to me at this point.
Yes. And what did you think? I mean, a lot of people, the I Hate Sand is the most memeable thing that everybody talks about when they talk about what they hated about the dialogue in Attack of the Clones.
Totally.
Was the I hate sand line. And I remember watching it thinking it was a clunky line, but it didn't feel like it was a George Lucas written line that just sounded clunky. It was like, I mean, he comes from a sand planet. And not a sand planet where it's nice like Naboo beaches. It's all sand. And right. It's relentless. And it's horrible.
Right.
And she talks about how we'd let sand get in between our toes. And she's talking about, you know, all this stuff to a kid who doesn't know from anything. Except for he's powerful and he's impulsive and, you know. And then he's just, his line is, I hate sand. I mean, it's like, gets everywhere. I mean, I'm from a sand planet. There's sand and there's like this much water. It's like an inch of water in the whole thing. And
literally moisture farmers.
They're literally trying to farm moisture out of the atmosphere and out of the ground. So to me, that wasn't as big a problem. And watching it again, I still didn't feel like it was that big of a problem. I would say the clunkiest of the dialogues is later when they're sitting by the fire.
Oh, yeah.
And he's like, it was, that's where I felt like it was a George Lucas written thing. He's like, you know, I'm hoping that kiss won't turn into a scar. It was too segued from one thought to another
right.
that it didn't feel, that's where I felt the dialogue was clunky. But I did not feel like the sand line was clunky. So people can come at me with the hate, but that's how I felt about it.
Well, I remember when you told me about that and it changed how I saw Anakin, because you're right. He's literally a child who grew up as a slave on a yep. desert planet.
The only other woman he knew was his mom and that old lady who was like a wrinkled raisin who's like, storms are coming, Annie.
Better get in, Annie. Yeah, yeah. He's going to be a little awkward, socially like different, and just not understand customs. And then think about it, those 10 years.
It's not like... Natalie, you know, that Padme looks like Mrs. Garrett from The Facts of Life. It's Natalie Portman.
Right, right.
I mean,
yeah,
this isn't an average-looking
right.
human female.
Right, and you have to understand, too, he spent those 10 years with, like, Obi-Wan Kenobi. Like, that's, like, literally, like, training, right? So it's not like he's interacting with women a lot. The first time he saw her,
Obi-Wan apparently was with Satine Kreese, the Duchess of Mandalore. That's a whole other story.
That's another story. Yeah, but and then literally the first time he sees Natalie Portman, he calls her an angel. So here he is hanging out with her alone. He's still like a teenager alone with an angel, Natalie Portman. Like, yeah, he's going to say some
awkward
things.
And she took care of him and was kind to him. I mean, it's not like she just dusted him off either and he was just too blind to see it.
Right.
You know, Anakin, many things will change when we reach, but my caring for you will not change. He's like, oh, I care for you too.
Yeah. So... Yeah, and it's interesting when you say that when you told me about that, because it also changed a little bit how I saw him in Revenge of the Sith.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, I have some thoughts on that too, but here are some other thoughts from Attack of the Clones before we jump to that. Love Christopher Lee as Count Dooku. Really wish he'd have been more a part of the main plot and had more screen time. If I do have a complaint about Attack of the Clones, it was I would have loved to have seen more Dooku in it.
Yeah.
He's one of my favorite of all the Star Wars villains. I just love the elegance, the one-handed lightsaber dueling that he does it like classic style.
Oh, yeah.
Like a true swordsman as opposed to, you know, kendo style. He's doing it classic fencing style kind of a thing.
Yeah.
I thought the best line of Attack of the Clones is when Mace Windu fires up his lightsaber and says, this party's over. During the execution.
Yeah.
Love that line. I mean... That and when Yoda pops out his lightsaber, when I saw that, so I saw it at the critic screening, and then I got to go to the station screening with listeners the night before it opened. And then I had already bought tickets for the day of the opening. So by the time the movie had been in theaters for like 2 hours, I'd seen it three times.
Wow.
But watching it with everybody, knowing what was coming. And so when Mace Windu drops the line, like the theater was like, yeah. And then when Yoda pulls out the lightsaber, I was really excited to see how, and everybody just starts cheering and like, it's like stunned disbelief that he, not only does he have a lightsaber, he's flipping all over the place like the Matrix.
Yeah.
Like you can't even, it's so cool. At least it was at the time. You couldn't even hardly process what you were seeing. You're like, he's flipping. I mean, that's why I say Matrix had just come out a couple years before and you're just like, oh.
Well, our crowd at the marathon even like, when Yoda pulled out the lightsaber, I remember everybody started cheering.
Yeah.
It was such a cool moment.
It really was. It was like the sheriff walking in.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good comparison.
Count Dooku. Or when he poses after he does, throws the lightning back. It was just, I mean, you'd only seen him ever hobbling around with a cane.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, when he needs to,
he's
one of the coolest things ever. Because at the beginning of the movie, you know, you hear Obi-Wan say, you know, if you practiced your wit as much as your saber technique, Anakin, you'd rival Master Yoda. And he's like, I thought I already did.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting,
and you're
too.
Like, saber technique, Yoda, what?
Yeah. The Yoda scene's interesting because it flips some of our, like, preconceived notions. Like, we don't really know Yoda can fight. And then all of a sudden, and we don't really know Yoda's ability, like, in his prime, we don't know what Yoda's about. Then we see it. Then what's interesting, too, is like Dooku throws out the lightning. And the only other time, I think, up until that point we had seen lightning was Palpatine.
Correct.
Right? And yet Yoda can stop it. So that was a very big, like, that I remember stood out to me because I was like, oh, lightning's like this huge thing. But then Yoda can stop it. And so that
changes a lot of
things.
Yeah, because he throws Anakin around.
Yeah.
Obi-Wan blocks it with a lightsaber.
Right, right.
But Yoda didn't even need that. He could just, first he reflects it.
Yep.
Then he absorbs it and throws it back.
Yep.
And then he just straight up absorbs it.
Yeah, which is so cool. Like, that was so cool to me. Like,
much to learn, you still. Like, he's taunting Dooku because he used to be his apprentice.
Yeah. Yeah. That was so interesting to me. I think in general, the end of that movie, that last, once the Clone Wars kind of starts and then, like, the, you know, that last lightsaber battle, that's all fun. And I think that's a cool ending to the movie. It's that, like, middle chunk that, like, really bugs me. In the beginning, like, still bugs me. I don't think the ending's too bad, especially when, you know, knowing the Clone Wars and, like, knowing that that gets extended. I know people have said, and I agree with this, that the Clone Wars TV series improves Attack of the Clones in a lot of ways.
It does, because you actually get to know some of the characters a little bit better.
Yeah, I think it definitely helps.
That's what I mean about having these prequel trilogy. If it was more like a miniseries,
you could
have had time to get to know these people.
Right.
Instead, we're looking for names that we're going to see later on, or if they're a big deal, we assume they must be dead later on because we didn't hear about them later.
Right.
So that's one of the disadvantages of watching the original trilogy and then the prequel trilogy.
Right.
Is that you end up looking for the connections instead of just seeing, well, what's the story? And so that was why watching these three first, people argued or asked me, not argued, they asked me, you know, which order are they going to show them in? Are they going to show them in the order that they came out? Or are you going to watch them in story order? And I said, well, it looks like we're watching them in story order.
Yeah.
And so it's a different experience when you watch it in story order.
Totally. Totally.
So we get through Attack of the Clones, and now we get to midnight, and that means it's time for Revenge of the Sith. I thought it was fitting because my first time watching Revenge of the Sith was a midnight screening back in 2005, and that was also when I vowed I would never do a midnight screening again. So much for that promise. But watching Ian McDiarmid in the Revenge of the Sith reminded me just how much he owned that movie.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He owned that movie. Now, the first time I watched it, I was just dreading all of my new favorite Jedi getting murdered. Because you knew very few, if any, were going to make it out alive.
True.
Mace Windu didn't know how he was going to die.
Nope.
But he pretty sure he was going to. He was too big of a Jedi member of the Council in order to be able to survive that. Interestingly enough, one of my biggest complaints watching Episode 3 the first time was I felt like Anakin turned to the dark side, like, on a whim. It did. Mm. It just seemed like Anakin's good. Anakin and Obi-Wan are friends. Anakin saves the Chancellor. Anakin and Obi-Wan part on good terms, even though, you know, you can see Anakin's kind of upset with the Jedi Council. So then as I'm watching it, I'm like, oh, I see the seeds forming here. Anakin's upset with the Council. They're insulting him. But then he finds out that Palpatine is the Dark Lord and then says, I'm going to go tell the Jedi Council. And I'm thinking, okay. And then Mace says, stay here. And if this turns out to be true, you'll have earned my trust. And I'm like, okay. And then Anakin obeys that.
Right.
And then he just sits there and you hear wow, 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 like a bit, like whatever those South African things are.
Yeah.
And then he just goes and dashes off in a ship, chops off Mace Windu's arm, and suddenly he's, I pledge myself to your teachings. Now, the first time I watched that, I was like, that doesn't track with me.
Right. It was quick.
But Watching them close together like this, it actually, especially this close to episodes 1 and 2, it actually makes Anakin's fall feel a little less forced than it seemed to me that first time. Mm-hmm. I noticed a lot more subtle hints that were there. Especially in the duel with Mace Windu, Anakin comes in, and I didn't realize how many times Palpatine had kept kind of needling, hey, you know, boy, I sure hope Padme doesn't die like you're afraid.
Right.
And I didn't make the connection of he'd had the dreams about his mom. He didn't act on them. And by the time he got to Tatooine, she was hanging on barely.
Yeah.
And then he still couldn't save her.
Right.
So instead he murders all the sand people. He was not about to let Padme have the same thing where he waits too long to do something about it. And so then Palpatine's little jabs and hints, and especially in the duel scene with Mace Windu, where by the time Anakin gets there, Mace had pretty much out-dueled Palpatine.
Yeah.
And then Palpatine, like, goes to helpless baby.
Yeah.
Like, he actually, I can't hang on. I'm shooting this lightning, but it keeps frying me. I don't seem to understand the connection between the two.
Right.
Anakin, you've got to help me. And all of a sudden, I'm starting to see... And he says something to, like, I'm the only one who can help you save Padme.
Right.
And I don't know if I heard that the first time through, but I was like, oh, and he's essentially saying, Anakin, you have to make a choice right now. The other connection I made was when he tells Anakin to kill Dooku, he's like, I shouldn't have done that. That's not the Jedi way. And then Palpatine's like, he was too dangerous to be left alive.
Right.
He's like, yeah, but it's still not the Jedi way. And so then when Mace Windu is like ready to kill him because he's not going to go quietly. Anakin, I was ready to arrest him. Anakin didn't have time to find this out. He's like, I tried to arrest him.
Right.
But he's obviously not going to let himself be arrested. So no. I got to end this.
Right.
And then, that's what Palpatine wanted.
Right.
And so Anakin has to make the choice right then. And he's like, I got to either let Windu wipe out Palpatine or I got to stop him. And then suddenly, Palpatine gets a second wind. Power! Unlimited power! So that felt a lot more... That felt a lot better. I felt like it wasn't quite as an abrupt a turn watching all three of the movies close together like that. I still think the novelization told that part better than the movie because it allowed you to get inside Anakin's head and see where he was just like... I don't know who is what. I don't know who I'm supposed to trust.
Right.
I thought I could trust the Chancellor, but Padme is hanging out with these people who seem to disagree with the Chancellor, and I don't know where to put my loyalties.
Yeah.
He doesn't know who to trust. And that's harder to do when you can't have dialogue between characters to express the thoughts.
True, true.
So, watching them together, that was one of my big thoughts from Revenge of the Sith. Now, you slept through part of Revenge of the Sith, so... Just kidding. What were some other thoughts you had?
I love Revenge of the Sith. It's still my second favorite Star Wars movie. Just going to say that. Come at me. just on your point about Anakin. So, obviously, as we've talked about, like, his Phantom Menace and Attack of the Clones and everything like that. Yeah, he's this boy who's raised on his, like, planet. He's a slave boy. Like, he doesn't do anything. And then he, like, all of a sudden he gets thrown into this crazy world. And then... Attack of the Clones, he's like, now he's in this war. Then he serves time as like a war hero. And then he finally gets a break for like a minute. And then it's like, then he's starting to get, first he learns that his wife is pregnant. His right. secret wife is pregnant.
Right.
Then the Jedi Council is playing him, using him against the Chancellor. And then the Chancellor is using him against the Jedi. Like, he's getting played on both sides.
Right.
Finds out his wife is pregnant. Then he has these dreams that his wife is going to die in childbirth. Like, he snapped. Like, he just... And that's a lot of stress on one person.
Right.
And so, like...
Oh, and you're also the chosen one, by the way.
Right, by the way, right. You have this pressure to be the chosen one to bring balance to the Force. And so, like, kind of like you were saying, like, when I was younger, I was like, oh, that's kind of weird. He just, like, gets down and he's like, I pledge myself. But now, looking at all the context, you're like... Yeah, why wouldn't he?
Well, and that's the thing. So once he made the betrayal of Mace Windu, he couldn't go back. He knew that too. So what were his options? If he doesn't, he can't go back to the Jedi Order and find out the secrets through the temple, which is what he kind of hoped to do as a master, but he wasn't made a master. Again, that was something that was also left out of the movie, not explained as well. You know, he talks about Obi-Wan holding him back, not teaching him things. He was upset about, he thought he should be more powerful than he is if he's the chosen one. Why isn't Obi-Wan making him more powerful or showing him how to be more powerful?
Right.
And, you know, he feels like they also kind of fear him, all of them. And that is a lot to deal with for an immature kind of a person.
Yeah.
And it's a lot to put on him.
Yeah.
And they leaned on him, too, as the chosen one, too. Like, he could do all those things. So they're like, all right, Anakin, go do this impossible thing. And he kept doing it.
Right.
And, you know, obviously, I think a storytelling would have been better if it wouldn't have had to. I wouldn't have had to watch all three movies to get those subtleties in the first place.
Totally.
So that's, I don't know if there was another way to do it that would have done it better. But I felt better about what had been made 15 years ago.
Yeah.
That I didn't feel the time that I watched it 15 years ago.
Yeah.
Another thing. So my wife and I have had twins since I saw Revenge of the Sith for the first time. And the babies they had at the end of Revenge of the Sith, way too big for what Padme looked like.
Oh, that's fair.
I mean,
that's
when
fair.
You're carrying twins, you are not as svelte as Padme. And if you are, then these babies are like 4 inches long. So
that's interesting.
Other than that, Obi-Wan and the High Ground. I think I told you about this when we were watching it.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's kind of become a meme of Obi-Wan having the High Ground. And I didn't put it together. I think I read an article online where somebody brought it up. But then watching the movie, I was kind of watching for that. Obi-Wan didn't have the high ground over Darth Maul in episode one.
True.
And
true.
He still defeated him.
Right.
Now he has the high ground over Anakin. And some people have always wondered, why did Darth Maul go out like such a punk? Like, he just fought viciously and then he just stood there while Obi-Wan jumped over him and cut him in half.
Right, right.
The prevailing argument that I've heard, and I don't remember if it was in the book or if it was just something I talked about with somebody, but it was Darth Maul didn't believe Obi-Wan could do what he did, and he was more stunned. Like, even he didn't realize that he was pulling the lightsaber toward him at the same time as he was finding some way to jump up over him.
Okay.
Now, there's no way that Anakin hasn't heard the story 100 times.
Oh, yeah.
About how Obi-Wan jumped over Darth Maul and defeated him.
Right.
So when Obi-Wan says to Anakin, don't try it, I've got the high ground. And Anakin's like, you underestimate my power. If you can do that to Darth Maul, I'm more powerful than you. I can get over you and get to the high ground myself.
Totally.
And Obi-Wan's like, dude, I'm not going to stand there like a, you know, with my mouth hanging open while you cut me in half.
Right, right.
And that was something I hadn't thought of before, either right before this trilogy or as I was watching it. And that was the things I put together. Like, Anakin had to have heard the story. Anakin had to think, oh, you know, that was the one last taunt from Obi-Wan. He's like, I've already screwed everything up. I haven't been able to defeat Obi-Wan. At the best, we fought to a draw.
Yeah.
And now Obi-Wan's got the advantage. No, no, no. If he can take out Darth Maul, I can take him out.
Right.
And I don't know that it's never been said specifically anywhere, but that was the thoughts I had as I watched it.
That's so interesting because he's now kind of that, if that is true and that's what it is. And that's interesting because it adds more context to don't try it. And it's like, he knows what he's about to try.
Yeah.
And Darth Maul being stunned by that move, he had no idea it was coming, but obviously Obi-Wan would know it's coming. So it's like, yeah, obviously I'm going
to
chop your legs off.
They fought each other to a draw.
Yeah.
Easy. Even when they're standing like a foot from each other on the little floating platform over the lava, you know, they fought over a wide space, then they fought in about as close a space as possible, and then they jump and they split, and now Obi-Wan has a seeming advantage.
Yeah.
So that's how closely matched they were.
It would be interesting to me to know how that battle would have continued if, like, and I always think about this. If Anakin had just, like, jumped onto the little mound and just, like, they continued fighting.
Uh-huh.
Like, it seemed like when Obi-Wan
says,
like,
stepped onto the beach and instead of trying to jump over him.
Right. If he, you know, like, Obi-Wan says, it's over, Anakin. Like, is it over? Like, if Anakin had just jumped onto the beach thing and then they started fighting again, would it be over?
Well, I mean, the runtime of the movie pretty much.
I was like, okay, we got
to
get.
Couldn't Anakin have used the Force to pick up some ash and try to throw it at Obi-Wan like that?
I mean, there's a lot of what ifs there, I guess.
Yeah, but specifically tied to what was said versus what was done, that was just something I hadn't really put together before, and I thought that was a really cool thing.
One cool thing, just like that I think is interesting. Speaking of Mustafar and all that, when. Seeing all the movies back to back like that, mm-hmm. when he goes into the room, when Darth Vader, technically, goes into the room with all the separatist leaders and like slaughters them, that really hit me because it was like all these people were in charge throughout the earlier movies, and like since he was a boy, they were like manipulating and doing all this stuff, and then he ends up killing them. I was like, that's like, I don't know, it hit me different.
That's interesting because that scene, the part that always got me was. When Newt Gunray, the head of the Trade Federation, you knew he was a sniveling coward.
Yeah.
But even still, you know, he wanted Padme's head on a plate in episode 2 because she embarrassed him and beat him in the Phantom Menace. But even then, when he looks at him like, Lord Sidious promised us peace. Like, that just got me. Like, yeah, you're a slime ball, but you've been manipulated this whole time by someone else who was promising you something he had no intention of ever delivering. This was his plan all along. Whoever was going to lose the war, Darth Vader or Darth Tyrannus or whoever was Sidious's apprentice, was going to wipe out everybody of the losing side that was in leadership. And then either he takes over the Confederacy as Darth Sidious or he rules it as Palpatine.
Right.
But at that point, he'd already succeeded in getting himself declared emperor. All the war was a plot by Sidious to put himself in power.
Totally.
All of it.
Totally.
And so I did feel a little bit weirdly sad for Newt Gunray.
Yeah.
Because he'd just been manipulated and, you know, his own greed brought his own downfall. But I still felt sad for him Anakin swiped him with a lightsaber.
That is a good point, though. Yeah.
So final thoughts for the prequel trilogy. Seeing it on the big screen again was fun because it went through the... I should say, but because it went through the night, that's what I was thinking. It felt kind of surreal.
Yeah, yeah.
I felt better appreciation for what George Lucas was trying to do while seeing it again reminded me that the overall movies weren't as bad as I sometimes remember or even imagine them being. There are parts that still seem as clunky as before, or even more so. However, one or two of my criticisms are lessened by seeing all three of the movies at the same time. That was one of my thoughts. Another was that the era that we're in of kind of peak TV, that's what they call it. It's changed me enough that I'd rather have seen the whole trilogy as a series. I mentioned that already a couple of times.
Yeah.
Introducing Count Dooku in episode 1 somehow. I know I told you about this when we were at the theater, but maybe just a mention by Qui-Gon about how his old master left the order because of disillusionment.
Yeah.
I just think it would have made his appearance in episode 2 more powerful and then more surprising when he turns out to be the Sith.
Oh, yeah.
Because it was like, you know, as soon as he fired up a red blade, you knew that he was a bad guy.
Right.
Even before Darth Sidious says, "Welcome, Lord Tyrannus."
Right, right.
I just think that... And granted, this one of the weaknesses of the prequel trilogy is that Lucas wrote them as he went.
Yeah.
He didn't necessarily have the whole story fleshed out and then figuring out how to do the parts in between.
Interesting.
So they couldn't because he hadn't invented the character of Count Dooku until he started writing Attack of the Clones. It wasn't like, you know, that's why having the overarching plan allows you to introduce little bits here and there. A mention of Wakanda in one of the early...
Right.
Marvel movies.
Yeah.
Maybe they don't do anything with it. Maybe they do.
But it's there.
But it's there, and you can say, oh, that's the Wakanda they were talking about in that news report in the background.
Right.
And so had just been some inkling of Qui-Gon's master, even if he didn't say it was Count Dooku, even if he just said, my old master left because of disillusionment, and then when Count Dooku says, you know, Qui-Gon would have joined me in Attack of the Clones, and Obi-Wan's like, bull crap.
Right.
And then he's like, well, you know, he wants the... And I just remember that when I first saw Attack of the Clones, that scene, I was like, whoa, what if the rebellion turns out it was... Like, I didn't know how it was all going to play out the rest of the movie, but I was like, what if the rebellion was, like, started by Darth Sidious? Like, wouldn't that be the... Like, the Confederacy ended up being the rebellion, the start of the rebellion.
Right, right, right.
And
that's interesting.
Obi-Wan's like not on the right side of it here because he's you know,
it's like a separatist movement, but then it turns out
then it turns into the rebellion.
That's interesting. Well, that's interesting too, because Obi-Wan or Anakin does say later to Padme that she's sounding like a separatist. So
right.
You could argue that in a way it is, but yeah, that's interesting. I always thought it was weird. I always thought I was missing something there, though, when they were like, oh, like Master Sifo Dyas or whatever.
Yeah, they never really went into much of that.
Yeah, I was like,
I would have preferred
it. Something?
There was a lot of message board chatter at the time that Sifo Dyas was Sidious. Like, they sound similar. And so
interesting.
Sidious placed the order for the clones, but they thought he said Sifo Dyas, or, you know, there was.
Interesting.
When we didn't know what was going to happen, that was sort of the chatter that we were having at the time.
That's smart. I always thought maybe, and this is totally wrong, but I thought like I was supposed to know that that was Qui-Gon somehow, but like that doesn't make sense at all, but that's what I thought. Because right. I was like, who's this Sifo Dyas guy?
Right, and that's why I say having some hints dropped, anything hints, even if Sifo Dyas had been one of the Jedi on the council.
Yeah, something.
Or that his name had been mentioned in the first one. So then you're like, wait a minute, one of the Jedi Council that we met in the last movie 10 years ago placed an order for clones? What?
Yeah.
And so I'm sure they fleshed that out in one of the books or something like that. I know that where Jango Fett gets recruited by Darth Tyrannus is the whole point of the video game Jedi Starfighter for PS2.
Oh, cool. Interesting.
I never got that far, but I did hear that eventually. All right. So prequel trilogy, I wish they hadn't ignored Natalie Portman in episode 3 as much as they did.
Mm, that's true.
And John Williams was on point with his score in those prequels.
Oh, totally.
By far the highlight of the whole prequels, John Williams, top of his game, awesome Star Wars stuff.
Totally.
All right. Let's do this. Let's take a break. We got to catch our breath, drink some water. And when we get back, we're going to go through the original trilogy and the sequel trilogy, probably a little quicker than we did the prequel trilogy. Well, we'll see. With me, you never know.
It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
All right. Thanks for sticking with us. Talking the Star Wars movie marathon, 9 movies in a row. It can be done. The question is it too much of a good thing? Well, we made it through the prequel trilogy, and it got to be, if I had one regret, Herb Scribner from the Deseret News, DeseretNews.com, it's that the A New Hope, you know, the movie that started it all, started at 2:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
It would have been nice to have had that more in a prime slot where you're ready and you're... It had to be the way it had to be in order to wrap up the movies in time to premiere The Rise of Skywalker. But I just felt like A New Hope at 2:30 in the morning, it kind of sucked that it was that early.
That's why I was a big, when people were asking me about the schedule, I said if you had thrown in Rogue One and Solo.
So we could sleep through that part?
Yep, exactly. And then maybe you would have gotten to A New Hope earlier in the morning, and it would have just been better that way. But yeah. Yeah, New Hope came way too early, and I remember I checked my notes. I did fall asleep during that one. I had recently watched it anyway, so I wasn't like gung ho to see it. But like I mentioned to you earlier, I mean that was one that I did see. I had never seen it in the theaters, so it was kind of cool to see like the original Star Wars movie in theaters in a big screen, like it was 1977. Well,
1983-ish.
Yeah, it is. So
or 1997 maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
I will say this. Even at 2:30 in the morning, I got goosebumps seeing A New Hope crawl up the screen and the text that I have had memorized for like most of my life. And then I sent out a tweet. Wow, they sure did an amazing job de-aging Carrie Fisher for A New Hope. She practically looks like a teenager. Oh, wait, what's that? Oh, never mind. She was a teenager.
She was.
It was funnier when I typed it at 2:30 in the morning. Shut up.
It's a good one.
Okay, so here were some other observations. Now, again, I'm watching a movie that I have literally seen 100 times.
Right, right.
I think that it's safe to say that I've actually watched that movie 100 times. I wish I kept actual track because I'd like to know if I have or not. But did the stormtroopers in A New Hope really only know it was droids in the escape pod because they found one little O-ring? The sand tracks that looked like three straight lines where R2 went didn't give it away? Because they're like, look, someone was in the pod. The tracks go off in this direction. And he pulls up a little tiny O-ring. Look, sir, droids.
Look, sir, droids.
Like, that was the way gave it away. It wasn't like the three lines of a droid trying to roll through the sand. I mean, sorry, that was the first time I'd ever thought of that. Was at, you know, 3 a.m. when that part happened. I will also say this, when you talked about seeing it on the big screen, Luke looking at the binary sunset on the big screen much more effectively conveys that longing and feeling of hopelessness than it does on a TV screen. Like, just seeing Mark Hamill's face that big, you're like, oh, wow, he actually acted that scene. Not that I didn't think he did, but I just, when I saw it, I was like, oh, he really did.
Right, right.
This isn't like a reshoot. This is how it's been the whole time. I just couldn't see it very well.
Interesting. Interesting.
So there was no McClunky from Greedo. Whatever that weird addition has been on the Disney Plus app, where he says McClunky before he with him and Han.
Yeah, but
Han still wasn't the only shooter, so they. Yeah, no change there.
So I've never seen the Han shot first version in like movie. I've seen it in a clip, and
he just shoots him.
Yeah, and to be honest, it totally changes Han Solo. Not, I shouldn't say totally, but it definitely like. If Han Solo shoots him first, you're like, oh, man, this guy's a BA. Like, he is, like, he's cool.
And see, I didn't, however old I was, the first time I saw Star Wars for, like, the second or third time when that kind of a thing might stick.
Yeah.
I always thought, first of all, Greedo pulled a gun on him.
Yeah.
Sat him down. And he's not getting out of that without shooting him.
No.
The only question is he going to be able to get his gun drawn before he gets shot?
Right.
That's why I didn't think that he needed, I didn't think that him shooting Greedo without being shot at first, I didn't feel like that made him evil or, you know, unredeemable or whatever. And I never thought he was a bad guy even for a second.
Right.
But maybe if I was a teenager or older, I would have wondered about his, you know, intentions and stuff like that.
Yeah.
He was always a good guy. I had the toys, you know.
Right.
But that was never stolen. But I did wonder, just like everybody else, why change that? It didn't feel like it turned him into, like, you know, if he had shot him and then shot the bartender and four other people in the bar as he was walking out.
That's different.
That's a different story.
Yeah.
But just shooting Greedo, who had already pulled a gun on him, to me, that didn't seem... It wasn't like he was unarmed.
No.
And Greedo just said, hey, I need to talk to you for a sec. And Han blew him away.
Yeah, right, right. Yeah, and I think it just... The only thing it makes him seem if he shoots first and if he's the only one who shoots, it's kind of like...
I mean, Han says over my dead body and Greedo says, that's the general idea.
Right.
What are his intentions? I mean, I don't know.
It definitely...
We don't have to re-litigate this.
Yeah, true, true. But it definitely makes sense that Greedo would shoot him too. So like...
Yeah. But Greedo misses. I'm just glad they didn't do the thing where Han slid. There was one version of it where they digitally slid Han to the side.
Oh, geez.
So like... Greedo shot Han, slid, and shot him. And I'm glad they didn't have that one in the version that we watched.
Yeah, that'd be bad.
All these digital restorations and special editions, and they still can't color Luke's lightsaber blade blue when he's training with Obi-Wan on the Millennium Falcon.
Thank you.
It still looks white.
Yes, it does.
Really? You can't color it blue right there.
You know what's funny, too? When I was a kid, I had my first toy lightsaber I ever bought was white.
Well, at least it's movie accurate.
Yeah, it's
for
movie
that
accurate.
Scene.
Yeah, but it's just like this is supposed to be blue, dog. Like, make it blue.
Well, and speaking of digital prints, the digital print looked fantastic on the big screen. There were no scratches or distortion in any
That's
of the
true.
Pictures. You can even see the shine on Vader's helmet, which I think I've never seen before in A New Hope.
That was cool.
There was a smattering of cheers in the theater when Luke blew up the Death Star.
Yep.
Gee.
Yeah.
Wow. We didn't think he was going to do
Surprise
it this time.
There.
So we finish A New Hope, and we get some breakfast.
Yep.
And then I have to do my work. So the reason I got to be there was because I could do some live TV hits for KSL 5 TV in Salt Lake.
Yep.
I was going to do my review of Rise of Skywalker, because I had already seen Rise of Skywalker when we started
True.
The movies. But why did it have to happen during Empire Strikes Back? They came to me for like way more hits than I've ever done before, like more live look-ins and stuff like that. So I ended up watching a good chunk of Empire that I got to see standing in the doorway of the hallway because I didn't want to walk in front of you and everybody else that was sitting by us over over and over again to come in and come out and come in and come out, especially during Empire. So I felt like I got a little bit shortchanged. I don't have as many thoughts about watching Empire as I did from some of the other movies because I didn't get to sit and really focus on it the way I wanted to.
Right.
So give me your Empire thoughts.
Yeah. So I still love Empire. Some interesting notes I have here. So as a marathon experience, I was apparently eating popcorn at 6:50 in the morning to keep myself awake.
Did it work?
Apparently it did. I think it's still a very beautiful movie. The final battle and lightsaber battle between Luke and Darth Vader is obviously like a very strong fight, and the color scheme, the orange and the blues, and that was really interesting. I think it was kind of cool to see the Lando and Han scene on Cloud City and those scenes because we have a little more context for Han. We have a little more context for Lando now because of Solo.
Yep.
And I think some of the ways I was viewing Han as like this kind of like gruff guy, and then there's even more, I don't know, just like Lando, and just like seeing that was interesting. And then knowing that like Lando was going to come back in Rise of Skywalker, like I was like, okay, like this will be interesting to see what he's about. So that was kind of cool. And then just some of the Emperor scene was interesting because it was like now we've seen how he became a thing, and then we don't see him in A New Hope, but then we see him again. So that was kind of cool to see him and Vader. And I think, and then obviously seeing the prequel movies so shortly before Empire shifted the way I saw Vader, because it was like, okay, we know there's a deeper story here. We know that his family, at least Padme and him having kids, meant a lot to him. And so now, like, there is that deeper, like, okay. And then, obviously, the battle scene, or the lightsaber scene, and, you know, Vader's like, oh, we can rule the galaxy as father and son, has a lot of, it echoes the Anakin telling Padme, like, we can rule the galaxy and make it the way we want it to be. And so that definitely made me feel like, okay.
Ooh, that's an echo that I had forgotten about.
Yeah, it was a good little thing there where it's like, okay, well, Vader's consistent at least. And it's just like, you know, he wanted to rule with his wife. He wanted to rule with her by his side and his family. And then now, so he's trying to like latch on to that. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and then, you know,
I'm curious. This is something I would have asked you had I been sitting by you. Did you notice how in that lightsaber fight, this is something I noticed over the 100 times I've watched Empire Strikes Back, Vader starts fighting one-handed.
Oh, yeah, he does. Yeah,
it's essentially kinda saying, look, I'm just toying with you. Yeah. I can take you out when I want to.
Right.
And he expects not to have to even really do much more than that. His point's not to kill Luke,
right,
at least initially. And then as Luke kind of holds his own, then Darth starts taking him seriously.
Right.
Especially after he gets, you know, kicked off the ledge
and
falls.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And then Luke goes hunting after him. And then Darth, you know, demonstrates, look, okay, fine. We've lightsaber battled. Now I'm going to start throwing junk at you. You can't handle that.
Right.
Throws out the window. Luke survives. And then this is the Darth Vader. To me, this is peak Darth Vader. He spent the whole movie murdering his own people.
Yep.
You don't want to cross the guy. And now he's not talking to Luke anymore. When Luke finally climbs back up and he starts looking in, and all of a sudden Vader comes out of nowhere, and not another word. It's just Hopper breathing, hammering at Luke with the lightsaber.
Yep.
Swinging hard. Luke manages to get the hit in on the arm. And then Vader's like, okay, enough. And he cuts off Luke's hand.
Yeah.
And then he calms down.
Yeah, yeah.
First of all, I had kids. I know that feeling.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah.
But at any rate, but that was just, I thought that was interesting how it progressed that way. He starts off one-handing.
He knows what he's doing.
You don't know what you're doing. Luke falls down on the ground. Vader flicks the saber away from him. But by the end, he's like, okay, I'll take you seriously now. That, to me, is the Darth Vader of my nightmares.
Right, right.
The one that doesn't say anything, that just comes at you.
Yeah.
We got to see that in Rogue One
A
little bit more extended.
Yes.
That's the Vader of nightmares.
Yeah. And that's interesting, too, because it's like in that stretch, he might even, and knowing how Anakin, how like emotional he gets, where he was like, you know, choking Padme in Revenge of the Sith, like that little stretch is probably where it's a very similar vibe, where he's just like, you're not my family. You're not my son. I'm just like,
I wish Anakin raging. Hadn't held his hand up to choke Padme. I wish it would just, his hands would have stayed at his side and she would have started choking and we all would have known what that meant.
Yeah, yeah, true.
But then it doesn't look like, oh, you did this to me.
Right.
If it was just like, you brought him here. And then she's like, oh. Like, right. She doesn't even know what's happening.
Right, right. Yeah.
But, all right, that's another what.
That's another, yeah. I will say with Empire Strikes Back, I noticed in my tweets, this is when I started feeling the effects of the marathon.
Okay.
So I said, we finished 4 movies and we're midway through 5. The hours spent here reminded me of being in a casino. No clocks, no light, just entertainment and free drinks, albeit soda. And then
just imagine if you'd had the other kind of drinks.
It's
you
true.
Wouldn't have made it through half the movies.
Yeah. Time is flying by. Like, I think that was when the marathon really started to hit me, because I was kind of like, oh, like this is, and I had been so tired, and yeah.
No, I remember by about, I think maybe it was right at the end of Empire. I think I even said to you, the prequel trilogy feels like a lifetime ago. Like it felt like we'd watched it so long before, and it was only just a couple movies before, but you know, tone and, you know, production value and thoughts and memories and having now stayed up through the whole entire night, it just felt like a whole different world when we had watched the prequels, even though they'd only been a movie and a half to 2 movies before.
Right.
And we still had 5 or 4 movies to go. So we're at the midway point, but it felt like the first third felt like it was a lifetime before.
Yeah, true.
So we finished The Empire Strikes Back. My funny tweet from that was, for some reason, when Darth Vader told Luke his parentage, no one in the theater seemed surprised except Luke.
What are the chances?
Yeah. All right. So now we've reached what was my favorite of the original trilogy when I was a kid, Return of the Jedi.
Oof.
First Star Wars movie I remember the entire experience of seeing it the first time, being excited, waiting in line through an entire showing, needing to leave for the bathroom midway through because I was only 7 years old. But, you know, Empire, I do remember having seen it in the theater, but short of seeing Han Solo frozen in carbonite and feeling vaguely surprised about Darth Vader being Luke's father, but I don't remember if I was surprised when I heard it in the theater or if I was surprised when everyone of my relatives who went to see it, the older ones, were all talking about it, and maybe I just sort of understood the jaw-dropping nature of it through their reactions to it. So
okay.
I don't know for sure. You know, I don't remember having been like, oh, I can't wait to see this new Star Wars movie. I would have enjoyed it later on had I seen it as a 15 or a 20-year-old.
That makes sense.
Some of the thoughts I had during Return of the Jedi, I really would have preferred that Lapti Nek remain in Return of the Jedi. That's the song sung by Sai Snoodles in Jabba's Palace.
Oh, jeez. I think I told you during the movie how much I hate that.
I did not like the new song or the Muppet guy.
That guy?
Yeah, or Boba Fett, like, chin-bopping one of the dancer
girls.
Yeah,
it's like, chill. We don't need that.
I don't know. This was my favorite tweet, although I don't know how many people saw it because it was in the middle of the... it was too early in the day, but every once in a while when I go do visits for church, I kind of feel like C-3PO did and when he knocked on Jabba's door.
Oh,
doesn't seem to be anybody here. Let's go back and tell Master Luke.
That's a good one.
That was my favorite tweet. The first time I saw Return of the Jedi when I was 7, I was absolutely convinced that that was Luke in the bounty hunter armor right up to the moment the Leia's face appeared. I was convinced that was Luke.
Interesting.
As a 7-year-old.
That's interesting. I could see it. I could see it.
I was like, Leia, what?
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. I could see that being Luke, too. Yeah, that tracks.
And then my favorite goosebump moment of the Star Wars movies, the scene and the moment in Return of the Jedi when Luke catches his lightsaber on Jabba's sail barge and the trumpets blast the Star Wars theme.
Oh, yeah.
And my favorite character of the whole series just starts tearing through bad guys.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great
Love that.
And the green lightsaber and like just...
And he just looks at it for a split second. Yeah. And then he just...
That was really cool. That was the first time we really got like Jedi stuff.
That's
like,
true.
Like we saw, you know, we saw like him training and all that, but that was like the first time we got, okay, this is Jedi in action.
This is what a Jedi can do against fool suckers who try to come at him.
Yep. Yeah. It was kind of cool. It was really cool.
I actually did a college paper on that scene.
Oh, really?
For a visual class that I had to take for my degree. And I took screen. This was advanced stuff for 2004
when I
was doing the class.
Yeah.
I took screenshots and I was pasting them into Word documents. So I was talking about how the camera sets up this. And there's a trumpet blast as each scene changes to set where all the players are.
Oh, yeah.
And then the music kind of leads you along and it leads right. And I had the scene frozen where he's holding the lightsaber right as the blade's going on. I wrote a paper about that scene. That's how much of a favorite it was.
That's cool. That's cool.
Watching all the Star Wars movies in a marathon gives added weight to when Yoda tells Luke, do not underestimate the powers of the Emperor in Return of the Jedi.
Ooh.
Because you just recently saw what happened in Revenge of the Sith when Yoda challenged the Emperor and underestimated him.
Yeah.
He got force lightninged into the wall.
Yeah.
And then he couldn't defeat him.
No. That's true. That's true. And just the global or like the wider manipulation of the Emperor and the ability to transform people's opinions and literally orchestrated an entire war just so he could have power. Like,
now, when we first saw Return of the Jedi, if you hadn't seen, you know, the prequel trilogy, you'd seen an old man appear shortly before Luke goes to Dagobah, because that's the scene right before, is the Emperor makes his grand entrance coming down the little walkway with steam issuing out on both sides. And he's just an old, wrinkled old man. The only thing you'd seen him before was just that one quick transmission to Vader in Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah.
And you'd heard about him.
Right.
But the first time you saw Return of the Jedi, you didn't even know he could use the Force. You just knew he was the Emperor.
Right. True. True. Yeah. You just knew him as the leader of the
Empire. Well, I guess we knew he used the Force because, you know, the Emperor said there's a great disturbance in the Force. We have a new enemy, Luke Skywalker.
Right.
Although you could have assumed that somebody else told the Emperor that he had the Force. But at any point, we had no proof yet that he could use the Force. We'd never seen Force lightning either. So when Yoda says, you know, don't underestimate the powers of the Emperor, he could have been talking to the audience like, yeah, he looks like a feeble old man.
Right.
But having seen those scenes before, it has added weight coming from Yoda, who at his supposed peak could really basically only battle him to a draw and eventually had to go on the run because he had the combined might of all the stormtroopers behind him.
True.
And he could, you know, he could keep battling Sidious, but eventually he'd get surrounded by troopers and taken out somehow.
Yeah, true. True.
But that was something I had never put together until we watched those all together like that.
That's interesting. That's interesting. That is a good twist.
I also thought, again, now we're at hour, we're past hour 12, I think, at this point.
Yeah, I'm getting tired just thinking about it.
So I wrote, now they're on Endor in Return of the Jedi, and I'm reminded that the Rebel Commando action figure was the worst because he had on that dumb backpack that was part of the figure, so you couldn't fit him into any ships. He has this backpack on it, balanced him so you couldn't stand him up very well, and he couldn't fit into any ships because the backpack pushed him too far forward, so his legs didn't fit in the ship, so he ends up sitting at this weird angle. All right.
Managing the toys of the Star Wars toys was always like a hard thing, I feel like. I remember with Han Solo, there was a cool like Han Solo figurine, but there was also like a carbonite thing you could put him in.
Yes, I had that one.
And then mine, it started to chip away, so I didn't want to use it too much. So then I would literally take Han Solo and freeze him in a cup full of ice.
You did?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I was.
My brother's famous for chewing the feet off of his Han Solo from Hoth.
Oh.
To where just a year or two ago, my sister-in-law put a couple of Star Wars figures on his birthday cake. And then he's got a picture of him sucking the frosting off the feet.
That's awesome.
It was hilarious. I also, as a 7-year-old, I could have sworn that an X-Wing hit the Death Star shield. When they attack the Death Star and they realize the shield was still up and they have to hurry and turn, and the Falcon and all the fighters make that sweep.
Yeah.
I could have sworn an X-Wing hit it. Now, I could have just imagined it thinking, oh, I hope one of the X-Wings doesn't hit it. And over time, my memory has just made it happen.
I thought that sounds vaguely familiar.
But I swear there was a cut where an X-Wing clipped the shield as they're all trying to turn away from it. That, just to prove that it was still up.
That sounds vaguely familiar. Interesting.
So I don't, maybe if somebody who's listening to this has some proof one way or the other, please submit it to us at KSL Andy.
That's interesting.
Or comment on our Facebook page. I've always wondered, the A-Wing pilot who crashed into the Super Star Destroyer bridge at the end of Return of the Jedi, was that an intentional kamikaze, or was it just a happy accident that he crashed into the bridge while he was out of control? You know, the guy's like, and he spins out, and they're like, intensify forward firepower, too late.
Yep.
I actually got a tweet reply to that one from a guy named Steve Lamson. My understanding was that he knew he was going to die, so he tried to do as much damage as possible, and his name was Arvel Krinid.
Wow.
So, it's always great.
There's the backstory there.
Watching Return of the Jedi for the umpteenth time, and I think this is something I brought up when you and I did our radio appearance, because somewhere in the middle of all this, we had to do an appearance on KSL News Radio during the movie show to kind of give our thoughts on what it's like to watch all the Star Wars movies in a row.
Yeah, yep.
For the first time, it occurred to me watching it this time with you, I always thought Darth Vader blocked Luke's lightsaber strike on the Emperor. You know, the Emperor's goading him. He makes him watch the Death Star destroy one of the capital ships from the rebellion.
Yeah.
And he keeps goading him, like, strike me down with all of your hatred and your journey toward the dark side will be complete. What if Darth Vader blocked that lightsaber strike to save Luke from turning to the dark side?
Mm.
Hear me out. Palpatine just told Luke that striking him down would complete the journey, and then Luke strikes anyway. Vader blocks him, and then the actual lightsaber duel begins.
Right.
But why would Vader prevent Palpatine from being struck down if that would turn Luke to the dark side, and then the Emperor would be dead, and they could rule the galaxy as father and son, just like he invited Luke to do in Empire?
Right. He would have allowed it.
Why did he block the lightsaber strike? I always thought it was just to protect the Emperor.
Right.
But maybe it was to prevent Luke from turning to the dark side.
That is so interesting.
Now, the challenge is, why did they continue the lightsaber battle unless Luke was fighting him because he was mad still? And I thought that, but then I thought, well, wait, then Luke's like, nope, I'm not going to fight you, turns off his lightsaber, jumps up, and Vader chucks his lightsaber at him.
Mm-hmm.
So that, I'm not quite sure. I mean, Luke deactivates his lightsaber like two or three times in the fight.
Yeah.
You know, Vader's like, you're unwise to lower your defenses, and then they start battling again, and then Luke jumps up, and Vader's chucks the lightsaber, cuts the thing, and then Luke goes into hiding. So that's probably the hole in my theory, is why did Vader continue to fight him? And this comes something to Rise of Skywalker,
mm-hmm.
which there's no way they could have known back then because J.J. Abrams made all this stuff up later.
True.
But it was a cool connection. If Luke had done that, then according to the Rise of Skywalker, the Emperor would have like possessed Luke.
Oh, yeah.
And so did Darth Vader know that and didn't want the Emperor to possess his son?
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting.
So it was a nice little bit of retconning, possible retconning by J.J. I got to give him credit for that. If that was sort of what he was thinking was, hey, what if we make it like this? So that's the whole reason that the Emperor was always goading people in to try to strike him down, was so he could go into them.
That's interesting.
And continue to live on in the next generation of the Sith person.
That's cool. I didn't think about that. That's interesting. That's a good little connection there. Wow, yeah.
So the original trilogy is still my favorite. But I had to ask myself the question, how much of that is nostalgia? If I'm being honest, probably a lot. Nevertheless, I can't watch them objectively after as much time as I've spent immersed in it over the course of my life. I wish more people could watch it on the big screen like I've been fortunate enough to do over the years. I mean, if they did a yearly Star Wars re-release in the theaters, I wish they would do it just so more people could go see it on the big screen.
Yeah. That's the one thing about Return of the Jedi. A lot of my notes here, I wasn't a huge fan of it on rewatch this mm-hmm. time. And I go back and forth. There's sometimes I love that movie to pieces, and then there are other times where I get very bored by Jabba and I get very bored by the Ewoks. So like really the only thing that saves me is that like final third.
Love the space battle. Into the Trap is one of my favorite musical cues of the whole.
It's so good. It's so good. But this movie, this time especially, what it did was I noticed it got me super, 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 super hyped for Rise of Skywalker. More than I already was, because I knew, like, okay, they're going to go back to the throne room. I knew Palpatine was coming back. I knew, like, we were going to see the conclusion of everything. And so, like, it got me hyped for that movie. But this time I didn't really, like, take to Return of the Jedi. But I will say it played very well on the big screen. And I agree with you in that way, that seeing these original movies on the big screen, because we've seen these original movies like thousands of times. And so we already have opinions on them. It's not going to shape, it's not going to rework too much of what we think. But seeing them on the big screen was kind of a cool experience. And so I was glad to kind of get involved with that.
It's interesting that you mentioned that, because they had a trailer for the special edition when it first came out. Uh-huh. And it actually played with entire generation. This is it.
People have experienced Star Wars the only way it's been possible.
And it's pictures of Star Wars inside a little tiny box TV.
You haven't seen it this way. You haven't seen it at all.
And they actually blast out of the TV, and it goes to full, like, you know, if you've only seen it this way, you haven't seen it at all.
Oh, that's awesome.
And people would buy tickets to Independence Day. Right. And everybody saw it anyway. But this trailer was playing in front of it. And they would buy tickets to Independence Day, watch this trailer, and then go get their money back.
Wow.
Because they got to watch some Star Wars on the big screen. And
that's,
I was like,
cool.
You know, plus a few new surprises. And it was like goosebump inducing.
Yeah.
And it was so cool. I wish I could have showed you it right here.
That's cool.
But I'm with you on that. I wish there was some yearly or every couple of years re-release so people would have a chance to go see it in the theaters. And I know they would sell, if they did it for a weekend, it would sell out every weekend. It would sell out every weekend that they did it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's cool.
All right. Any other final thoughts, original trilogy, before we jump to the sequel trilogy?
No, just it was really cool to see on the big screen and kind of relive those moments again. And yeah, it was kind of a cool too to lead into the sequel trilogy. So yeah,
so we get to The Force Awakens, movie that was just as anticipated as Episode One, The Phantom Menace, was, because this time we knew we were going to get to see characters that we had known before.
Yeah,
we waited, you know, essentially 30 years since the end of Return of the Jedi to see Han and Luke and Leia again on the big screen in those roles.
Yep.
So sequel trilogy, I didn't have as many thoughts at that point. Also, because as we started to get into the sequel trilogy, I didn't want to tweet things out that might give something away for Rise of Skywalker.
Oh, that's smart.
So I didn't take as many notes, but here's a few of the things. Still love how the Millennium Falcon got reintroduced in The Force Awakens. It was like it was its own living character.
Yeah.
Great way. J.J. Abrams did a great job on that intro. Having said that, it still doesn't make sense why Han wasn't in possession of it, but
yeah,
other than so that he could come back and get it.
Right. Like, where did...
Don't like where he started our original trilogy, our legacy characters. Don't like where he started any of them on the chessboard. I just...
Yeah.
If I had one regret, I'll say it now in case I forget it later. There's a part of me that wishes they had told the whole Rey story 50 years after and all the legacy characters were dead.
That makes sense.
Like,
yeah,
because nobody's really satisfied with the way the legacy characters were used, or at least,
right,
I don't think you can find a consensus on which character, oh, I was satisfied with that, oh, I was satisfied with that, until we had the scene in Rise of Skywalker with Han Solo.
Yeah,
I wasn't satisfied with Han Solo's end in The Force Awakens,
and we didn't really
get, I was much
get...
better with it after I got to have that second scene with Kylo and his, or with Ben and his dad.
Yeah. And we didn't even get the legacy characters all together again.
Yeah.
Like, that would have been kind of,
right,
cool. Like, yeah, I agree with you. They weren't, like you said,
and
the
chessboard.
And
then, of course, Carrie Fisher tragically passes away, so they really couldn't use her the full way that they probably thought they were going to do.
Right.
So that was unfortunate. And then, you know, there's been many, many thousands and millions of words written on the internet of how people feel about Luke's use in The Last Jedi.
Right.
Which, once I got over my initial not wanting him to be that way, I actually was a lot better with it.
Yeah.
And I'll get to that in a sec. But here's one of my thoughts, Force Awakens. When Han sees Luke's lightsaber, do you think he immediately remembered using it to cut open a Tauntaun? Like, you know, Rey's like has it from Maz Kanata. And he's like, Han thought, hey, I remember that. I used it to cut open a Tauntaun.
I saved Luke's life with that thing.
Like, that's the only time he would have touched it, as far as I know.
Yeah, as far as we know.
There's some comic where he ended up having to pick it up sometime. But anyway, I had that thought. I remember the first time I saw Leia in Force Awakens, it was difficult to look at her so aged. But I guess I've adjusted it because it didn't seem that way this time. It didn't. The first time I was like, oh, you know, the last time I saw Leia was Gold Bikini, more or less.
Right.
And, you know, now she's a lot older. It's not her fault. She's older. It's not her fault. She's Debbie Reynolds' daughter and had the most difficult life imaginable.
Yeah. She had, she had a tough one.
But this time she didn't seem, and maybe it's because I've gotten used to her. I didn't seem to have that same reaction.
Interesting.
Do you think J.J. Abrams made Finn a sanitation worker on Starkiller Base just so they could make the trash compactor joke about Captain Phasma in The Force Awakens?
I remember you told me, you asked me that question during the movie theater, and the answer is yes.
Probably.
Probably.
I thought seeing Han Solo's fate in The Force Awakens on the big screen again is every bit as emotionally impactful as it was the other times.
Yeah.
Even though I knew it was going to happen, even though I knew that they were going to have the redemptive moment, because I'd already seen Rise of Skywalker, it was still, whoa, like, still jabbed me in the heart. Those are my thoughts on Force Awakens. Do you have any particular ones?
Yeah. So still one of the best visuals from maybe the entire saga is seeing that giant Star Destroyer on Jakku, the one that's like crashed.
Oh, yeah, into the sand.
That's amazing. Love that.
That's a good point. That was really cool.
I did... This is the story of the marathon. I fell asleep for a second during I was awake for when Han Solo like arrived in the movie.
You slept through the Rathtar part?
Yeah, the whole like Kanji Club thing, which I
Kanji Club.
I hate that whole part. I hate that. This is a tweet that is interesting. Now having seen Rise of Skywalker twice. Forgot how many questions Force Awakens raises. Excited to see how many get answered in Rise of Skywalker.
Yeah, and how many did you feel? All of them?
Probably.
Some that had already theoretically been answered in Jedi.
I was a young child when I sent that tweet out because I
was a naive youth on Tatooine looking at the binary suns.
Yes. Okay, here's this tweet. That final Han and Leia scene brought me to tears. So when they're saying goodbye to each other, that's a hard one.
Right.
And then,
especially now that you know that's the last time they're going to see each other because you didn't know it the first time you saw it.
Right. And then this is true. I think this is still true. It's one of the best Star Wars films in the saga, interestingly. I mean, I think it's just, it's a clean movie. It does everything. The score is beautiful. I think that's some of John Williams' best work. And I just wish that it had more Luke in it, or we had, and I think it goes back to what you're saying about where the characters were. It kind of sucks that we get to Luke and then it's over. I wish there had been maybe a little bit more there, or they'd taken a different direction, but you can't change it. But I think it's still like, it's still a good movie. It sets up everything. And I just still remember the excitement I had before it came out. I was like super excited to go back to that universe and see what they did. So,
and see, I don't begrudge people who put that one up at the top, but for me personally, I was having a good time, and I was thinking at the time, even as I was watching, like, wow, this is like really big a ripoff of the original New Hope. I wasn't saying that in a sardonic, I hate this kind of way. I was just thinking, oh, bigger Death Star. Okay, sure. Why not?
Right.
But then when Han got killed, and I had long arguments / discussions with different people about this one. Yes, I understand story-wise why it had to happen. I just wanted them to all survive the first movie. I knew they all probably had to die at some point.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they all did.
Right.
But I kind of just wanted to have one movie with all of them alive again. And then I'd be readying myself for Han Solo's death in the second one. It took me by such surprise, and it jolted me, and it took the fun out of it for me.
Yeah.
It also made me wonder if maybe I was taking this all a little too seriously. One of many times I've asked myself that in this life. But if that's somebody's favorite, I'm not going to be like, oh, you're wrong because these other movies are so much better. No, everybody reacts differently to different things.
Yeah.
And this is, I was just one that
I think I liked it a little bit better maybe this time, but I think I've seen it the least out of The Last Jedi and the Force Awakens. I think I've seen The Last Jedi several more times.
Interesting.
So The Force Awakens sets the table for the questions that J.J. didn't feel were answered enough or wanted to go a different direction. A lot of comments have been that sounds like The Last Jedi should have been its own film, and J.J. should have done the stories that apparently he wanted to tell.
Right.
I don't want to rehash that necessarily because everybody has their own opinion. But now we get to The Last Jedi, which is one of my favorites. I put it probably second in the saga for me personally.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. That's
just
good.
The more I watched it, the more I ended up liking it.
Yeah.
Is it perfect? No. But having Mark Hamill back as Luke is still outstanding, and I'm so glad I got to see him in that role one more time.
Yeah.
I admit, I wished I could have seen him wield the lightsaber and slash a few bad guys, but he's already done that.
True.
Still have Return of the Jedi if I really want to see it.
Right, right.
But just Mark Hamill threw himself into it. You know, in our Rise of Skywalker podcast, my colleague Adam Thomas really did not like Rise of Skywalker.
Uh-huh.
And that was one of the things that bugged him a lot was, it was all the walking back of Rian Johnson stuff that he did. And, you know, for some people, the Luke not being Luke, but I just... He blames Mark Hamill for sort of maybe some of the hate on The Last Jedi because of his comments that he said about how, well, I fundamentally disagree with everything you've done here. However, having said that, I'm going to go out and try to do the best I can.
Right.
I do notice that a lot of people leave out that second part.
Yeah.
Just show the part where he says, I fundamentally disagree.
Right.
But he also says, I'm going to give you the best thing I got. And then I watch him in the movie, and I feel like he did give me everything he had.
Oh, it was great.
Harrison Ford wanted out, didn't want to be Han Solo again, but he came back, and both times he gave his all.
Yeah.
And I was glad for that.
Yeah.
As much as I hated Han Solo dying, I was glad to see that Harrison Ford didn't just phone it in.
Yeah.
I was glad to see that Mark Hamill, even though he disagreed, didn't just be like, I don't want to be a Jedi.
Right.
Like, he acted like all of those things. Like, he's an actor. That's what he's supposed to do.
Right.
And I liked that.
Yeah.
Once Luke wasn't the Luke I was imagining, which that was part of the meta part of the movie, but
right.
I loved seeing Mark Hamill as Luke Skywalker. It was nice to see him again in Rise of Skywalker. Fun facts about The Last Jedi. That was some of the stuff I tweeted. Fun fact one, The Last Jedi is the only Star Wars movie I own in UHD.
Oh, there you go.
Fun fact, I'm told some fans did not care much for The Last Jedi.
Oh, really? Oh, weird.
Fun fact three, the actors who play siblings Luke and Leia in The Last Jedi are not actually siblings in real life.
I didn't know that. Wow. What a twist.
Oh. All right. So that was my thoughts on The Last Jedi. Did you have any other thoughts? I mean, I don't know where you felt about it before you saw it again.
Yeah. The first time I saw it, I was kind of like, oh, this isn't the movie I'm expecting, which is like everyone feels that way. Then every time I've watched it since, there have been parts of it that I'm like, this is super cool. Like the Battle of Crait is amazing. The Rey training is kind of cool and Luke and everything. And then one note I have here is that like when you've watched the whole saga up until that point, it makes a lot of sense in a lot of ways because like Luke is kind of like he has this big Jedi moment and then he like kind of goes off and like the Jedi when he talks about like the Jedi being arrogant and how like he didn't really he even in the beginning of the whole saga like Luke's kind of like indifferent about joining the whole thing and getting involved with the Force. And so it's interesting that once he kind of does and he has this big dramatic moment and then it kind of makes sense that he would go off and kind of like try and like find the Jedi texts and then turn himself off in the Force. I thought The Last Jedi and Force Awakens play really well back to back and part of that is obviously the timeline.
Right, and they happen back to back.
Right, so it flows very well. I remember when I first saw it, the space horses, I forget what they're called.
They're not Rathars. They're Farthiers or something like that.
Yeah, they kind of, to me, like when I first saw them, like that's kind of weird there'd be horses in space. But then in Revenge of the Sith, like there are these horses that like wheel the cart that Padme's on during her funeral. So I picked up on
I
that.
I wonder, they're the same?
I don't think they're the same, but they are like a horse type thing. So I was like, okay, well
they ride horses in The Rise of Skywalker.
Yeah.
But I don't know if they're the same.
Yeah, that they do. Last Jedi could have shaved off 30 minutes with its runtime with some of the chase scenes and small moments. So I think we even talked about this. Yeah. How like some of the chase things, like, and then even if they,
the
you
farther
know,
years, I, like, I'm glad they got to trash the planet as far as for what the characters say, but I it just that chase was way too long.
Yeah, and it didn't really serve too big of a purpose. There was one take that I read once that said that like that would have been a whole better scene if the people chasing them hadn't been like whoever it was. If it was like Captain Phasma who was chasing them, that it would have like
and they're
added,
just trashing as they're trying to get away desperately yeah. instead of just wrecking the planet.
Yeah,
that makes kind of sense.
Yeah, but otherwise, I think this movie really holds up. I think a lot of the I'm saying this before I saw Rise of Skywalker. So, and I've heard that Rise of Skywalker actually like makes you appreciate Last Jedi more.
I hope so.
Yeah. So anyway, it was a good movie. I still think it's one of the better ones. And it was kind of cool seeing how they like changed. They zigged where you thought they would zag. And,
right.
You know, so.
Well, okay. So these were some things I wanted to point out to you during the movies.
Oh, please
but
do.
I couldn't do without spoiling stuff.
Oh, please do. I want to hear these.
Palpatine saying the dark side of the Force is the pathway to many abilities some consider to be unnatural. I was gonna be like, I wonder if that's going to play a role later. Couldn't say that to you.
Couldn't say, yep.
I wonder if that's the last we'll see or hear from Mace Windu. These were things I wanted to say to you.
Okay.
I wonder if Kylo seeing water on his hand, when Kylo sees the water on his hand when he's force timing with Rey in The Last Jedi.
Huh.
Because that's what set the precedent that through the Force, like, it's not just that they were seeing each other. Somehow, they were actually able to physically make some kind of contact.
Right.
So the spray's happening all around Rey, and then Kylo looks at his hand when they cut the connection, and it's wet.
Yeah. Interesting.
That becomes a thing later.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it
so
does.
So that was a Rian Johnson thing that J.J. kept around and then actually, you know, utilized.
That's cool.
I wonder if Luke's X-Wing in the water still works.
I think, did you say that? You might have said that
no.
one. No? Okay.
I wanted
that's,
to.
That's funny,
or maybe
though.
I did. Maybe I did without, like, saying why. Like, hey, I wonder if that thing still even works.
Yeah, that's funny. That, yeah.
I wonder if Luke's line to Kylo, this was the one that I noticed. When Luke's line to Kylo, strike me down in anger, and I'll always be with you, just like your father. And then you see his father still with him in Rise of Skywalker.
Yeah.
I didn't catch that. Until we were watching The Last Jedi right before Rise of Skywalker, and I was like,
yep.
Cover the mouth, you know, eyes
good.
Get wide kind of a thing.
That's good.
Final question. Too much of a good thing?
No.
All right. That's the right answer.
Yeah.
Is there any Star Wars that could be too much of a good thing?
Oh, no.
You could argue that not everything that Star Wars comes out is good. A Star Wars holiday special, maybe too much of a good thing there, but no.
True.
All right. So we're running out of time because other people need to use our recording studio.
Of course.
But we do need a couple of quick thoughts. Rise of Skywalker on second viewing.
On second viewing, I liked it even more. I think as long as you're like cool with some of the choices they make and you're like, okay, this is kind of like with Last Jedi. This is what they did. This is what happened.
We're not going to change it no matter how much we hate it.
Right. Let's just do it. I was fine with it. I think it's cool. I mean, like, again, I go back to this thing that we've always been talking about. Like, since when does Star Wars have to be like an Oscar movie? There's going to be – they're hokey. They're fun. They take place in the universe. Let's have some fun with it. And I had a lot of fun with Rise of Skywalker. And I think the fact that there's not like this deeper question – means like it's like deeper questions, more philosophy and all that. I can sit back and watch it, have some fun. I wasn't in love with some of the explanations or the lack of explanations and stuff like that. And like some of the rumors about a JJ cut, like cool.
Yeah, those are still going around.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind some of those things that they mentioned, but otherwise I liked it. I had fun. Everything kind of like hit. It was kind of cool. And I love Palpatine, so it's cool to see him back. I'm a fan. It's, I think, my fourth favorite right now.
Okay.
So that's where I sit.
I would put it in the middle. You know, I didn't dislike it.
Right.
There were some things about it that I disliked, because I liked Last Jedi. I kind of agreed with Adam in that I didn't like, it seemed like there were some deliberate walkbacks, but there were also some things where it was obvious he took the thing that was in Last Jedi and continued it.
Right.
So I was glad for that too. I didn't feel overwhelmed when I left it.
Right.
And that's not a requirement for me to like it because I liked it fine.
Yeah.
And I was going to like it no matter what. There's not a single one I haven't liked.
True.
But, and I said this in our long podcast, if you want to get my full thoughts, go to our Star Wars Rise of Skywalker review, where I just said, sadly for Star Wars, Avengers Endgame did such a great job of wrapping up a long, emotional, invested time saga that Star Wars didn't quite pull that off, even though I was probably more invested in it.
Right.
And maybe that's why. I don't know. But I liked it fine. I just was kind of like, huh. I just didn't feel like it was powerful enough one way or the other to whatever your first impression was. It didn't have enough to move the needle one way or the other.
That's true.
And so if you weren't going to like it, it's not good enough on second viewing that you'd be like, no, I changed my mind. I do like it.
Right.
And if you liked it, you're not going to watch it a second time and go, no, I changed my mind. I hate it.
Right.
You're just going to be wherever you were. That's where you're going to be.
Yeah.
And I was in the middle, and I watched it a second time with you. I'll probably see it a third time because I got to take some of my younger family to see it.
Yeah.
But I don't see it like moving me one way or the other.
Yeah.
Either way. But it is what it is. It's there. I did think I wasn't dissatisfied with some of the choices. There were times where I was like, oh, wouldn't it have been so cool if all the Force ghosts would have appeared?
Yeah.
I've seen online that there were many people who had the same thought as I did.
Yeah.
But we got what we got. In our full review, which if you haven't listened to, you ought to, we kind of place the blame. If there's to be blame, you know, I blame with air quotes JJ because this is where he started all the characters.
Right.
And I feel like that sort of determined that there wasn't that many things that they could do after that.
Right.
But it's kind of, I kind of blame Disney in setting release dates. So instead of being able to come up with what's the best story, they had to get something done in time. You know, you've worked on Deadline and that's all you do.
Yeah, it's all you do. It's good enough.
Do you feel like it's that every single thing you put up on Deadline is your best work?
No, it's good enough.
It's good enough.
But if you have time, it can be great.
Right.
Right.
And if you're fortunate, if you can put something up on Deadline that is great.
Right.
But not everything is.
No.
And that's really what it came down to me is when it was all said and done, it felt like it was kind of a Deadline trilogy.
Yeah.
We have to meet these dates. Whether we've got everything the way we want it or not. And so here's the best we could do with what we were given.
Right.
And, you know, and so there's a part of me that feels like I just regret that Star Wars got the best we could do with what we were given instead of the best that we could do.
Right. That's smart. That's.
All right. Well, Herb Scribner, DeseretNews.com, thanks again for joining me on the podcast.
Anytime.
What is the best way for listeners to access your work?
Yeah, just go to Deseret.com or just look me up.
Deseret.com or DeseretNews.com?
Deseret.com.
Really? Did that change?
It did change, yeah. So Deseret.com, or you can look me up on Twitter, at Herb Scribner, that's usually the best way to look at my work and stuff. So thanks for having me on. I always love being on this podcast. It's my favorite one that I do. It's also the only one I do, but it's my favorite. So,
well, I'm glad we're at least in the top five of your favorite ones that you do.
Totally, totally.
Well, we've got more good Star Wars content in our other past podcasts, so please check them out. If you're listening today from a link on social media, you can access past episodes, or even better, become a subscriber by going to Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, or Spotify and searching Fan Effect. Give us another listen, and even better, leave a review. Until next time, remember, we love this stuff just as much as you do.